What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Welcome to Just a Bit Outside, the baseball movie podcast brought to you by Bucko Banter. Today we are reviewing The Scout, a movie about King Kong. If King Kong were a man so deeply traumatized by his childhood that he forgot every detail of his past life and became a superhuman, only able to think about baseball.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plates, and in case after case, run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snakes.
Further ado, let's talk about a surprisingly charming baseball movie, The
I'm
Scout.
So excited that you liked this. Because I have loved this movie for a long time, and I don't know, I know maybe two people total outside of you that have seen it ever.
Brendan Fraser, Fraser?
We're in the Fraser comeback era, man.
He is an enigma to me. He did just win the Oscar 2 years ago?
For the whale.
He is just so interesting in this. So... generally, this movie starring Albert Brooks, Brendan Fraser, Fraser, and Diane Weiss is about...
Diane Weiss was famously the mom in Edward Scissorhands. If you're like, where do I know that lady from? It's from that.
I didn't even put that together.
Yeah, it's from that. That's the one where you know her from. She's had a long career, but that's always the one where you can't place her because she looks a little different in this movie.
Amazing.
Yes. That is how you know, because it's like she has one of those like, how do I know this lady? Kind of faces. Yeah, it's from that.
I love these little facts, these little pieces of trivia.
And Albert Brooks, famously Hank Scorpio on The Simpsons, one of the all-time great one-off characters, maybe the greatest, perhaps the GOAT.
And he is just coming through and giving us an outstanding comedic performance in this film.
Yeah, he was one of the writers on this movie, and you can tell that he was really giving himself some heat to work with.
This is
like Albert Brooks at the peak of his like really snappy comedic powers.
Lined him up, knocked him down. Directed by Michael Ritchie, this was released September 30th, 1994. So this is about a scout who is trying to find the one. He's trying to hit it big to redeem himself. So we open here, Albert Brooks' character, Al Percolo, Italian-American, in a motel. Looks like
you can see he's driving a pretty crummy car. It's not the nicest accommodations in the world. So you know the guy's kind of a bozo right off the bat.
Yeah.
Down on his luck type.
Things are not looking super hot. He's staying in a motel, you know, nothing very fancy at all. And he goes in, turns the TV on, and really setting the table early here, The original King Kong is on, and he comments that this is the original, and he starts to quote the movie as he's watching it. And this will be a theme throughout. But simultaneous to this, and one of the best parts of the movie, right off the bat, as soon as the movie starts, the spaghetti briefcase.
I love the spaghetti briefcase is really what pulled you into this movie.
I mean, it's ludicrous. You see Al open up a briefcase. It's like a halfway cross between a suitcase and a briefcase. And you see he has two bags. He opens it up, and it is a travel kit to make spaghetti.
Yeah, a little camp stove, some nudes.
I believe it has the camp stove, two pots, I believe, maybe just one. The noodles, a set of like camp utensils, and the sauce as well.
It's spaghetti and on the go.
It is just lovely.
You need a nice spaghetti.
I mean, this is just, he's like the quintessential Italian American. And what is the quintessential Italian American baseball team, Mr. Miller?
The New York Baseball Yankees.
The New York Baseball Yankees, which is the team that Al is a scout for. So, next scene starts. You find out how down on his luck that Al actually is. He's talking to some of the other scouts, and they're ribbing him. They're making some jokes towards him. The last guy he found, McGowan, not good.
Yeah, didn't pan out. You can tell that Al's having a pretty rough go here. A couple more strikes than home runs.
0 for 61, Mr. McGowan is, in his last 61 at bats, which is worse than Stan Ross's comeback.
It is by
2 for 58.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Al remarks at this point, he just needs to find his King Kong, which I don't love the analogy personally.
I mean, I get it. It's, you know, with King Kong, they hop on the venture and they go to Skull Island, and all of a sudden he finds, you know, they find Kong and bring him back, and it makes him a huge megastar. Without knowing the, you know, it glorifies like putting King Kong in New York, but it doesn't talk about like how the success is ultimately really, really awful.
It's,
you know, it literally kills King Kong. Spoiler alert, Brendan Fraser lives in this movie, by the way.
He does live in this movie.
Yeah, I'm not foreshadowing something horrible.
So Al is at this minor league, summer league, something league game with a couple other scouts, and they are watching a baseball player who is played by a very young Michael Rapaport.
He is crazy young in this movie.
He has to be like early 20s in this one.
Yeah, he plays a high school kid, and it's believable.
But he is untouchable. He is an unbelievable pitcher. He has the stuff. He has the velocity. He's the best prospect that there's been since forever. But he's untouchable. His parents, super Catholics, super duper Catholics. And they're saying, you're going to go to school. You're going to finish your degree. And then you can think about playing baseball. And Al says, you know what? I think I can crack this. I think I can convince them to find a way for him to play some baseball for the New York Yankees.
And what better way to do that than to set a slick and clever ambush, almost Bugs Bunny style, for a wholesome family.
So he confronts, he's lying in wait. He ambushes.
It is quite literally an ambush.
The player, Lacey. Tommy Lacey?
I think so.
As he is leaving the game and says, don't you want to play for the New York Yankees? Don't you want to play for the best baseball team that ever existed? He says, yeah, but I want to go to school. My parents are very about it. I would like to play baseball personally, but there's no way my parents could be convinced. They hash it out, and Mr. Percolo gets a dinner invite to family dinner with the Lacys. So we see Al at the dinner, mom, dad, Tommy Lacey, and little bro.
Unnamed little bro.
Looking over all of the members of this scene, a portrait of the one and only Jesus Christ.
The Sultan of SWAT. The King of Crash. The Lamb of Hosts.
And you see now Al's ability to do some slick talking. You see how he kind of made his way to where he is. He has a bit of a way with words. He's able to do some convincing. He's able to kind of really sell the idea of playing Major League Baseball, make it seem like it's going to be the best thing that these kids, these young players could ever possibly do, especially for the New York Yankees.
And it should be noted that the whole time Al is simply lying through his teeth. Like, everything he is saying to the parents to talk up the Yankees is just purely fabricated. Everything.
They say, hey, you know, we really want him to finish his school. And he said, hey, it's very common for pros, for big leaguers, to hire tutors to continue their education, even if they're playing Major League Baseball. Lou Gehrig had a tutor in the dugout. Between innings, he's reading up on world geography, ancient history, in the dugout. These parents are pretty gullible.
This does have one of the funniest lines in the entire film when they're talking about Lou Gehrig. And when mom says, didn't he get sick? Didn't he get a disease?
I have it written down right here.
Al's line, Al's response, delivered only the way that Albert Brooks possibly could. You want to hit us with the line?
Mother says, didn't Lou Gehrig have a terrible disease?
Terrible disease.
And Al responds, why, yes, he did. But he didn't get it from the tutor. I think he got it in college. Stells the mom. I mean, I have that one written down, starred, underlined, highlighted, bolded. Crushed me.
I think he got it. Like, that is truly a laugh out loud scene, because it's bang, bang, bang. And that's how we know Al Percolo is one smooth operator.
I paused the movie, laughed out loud, and I had to rewind so I could write the quote in its entirety. The way he says, I think he got it in college.
I think he got it in college.
Oh my God. It's brilliant. I mean, it's just brilliant.
And obviously that worked, because the next time we see Tommy Lacey, he's at Yankee Stadium.
He's at Yankee Stadium, and he has a start. He has a start. We're looking in the field. Nowhere to be found. He is in the bathroom stall, and he's not doing too hot.
Yeah, he's having a full-on panic attack. He's an anxiety attack. He's throwing up. Like, things are not going well for Tommy. You know, he just wants to leave. He wants to go home. He wants his family. He wants the Lord.
He wants the Lord. And Al says, the Lord wants you to play baseball.
Honor thy mother. They have to send Al down into the clubhouse to get him like a hostage negotiator.
The Lord wants you to play baseball, Al says. He says, honor thy mother, thy father, and thy Yankees contract. And, you know, he does eventually convince Tommy to leave the bathroom stall and make his way out onto the mound. Now, it takes a while, but he convinces him to do it. So now we see Tommy Lacey ready to make his MLB debut pitching for the New York Yankees.
After being literally dragged through the clubhouse by his ankles.
Dragged out. We almost see Al climb into the bathroom stall with him. It is everything short of that. Now, it does not go very well for Mr. Lacey.
No, not go be very well at all. If we're being honest.
He's hurling, and not in the baseball capacity. He is throwing up on the mound.
Loses the lunch.
And not only does he run off the field, he runs into the stands, out of the stadium, down the parkway. He's gone.
Headed for the turnpike.
And this is kind of the death blow for Al at this point. After McGowan goes 0 for 61, he is on the hot seat. He puts his whole reputation on the line for Tommy Lacey. And Tommy Lacey, not one pitch thrown. He can't do it. His warm-ups are in the stands. Can't do it. So instead of firing him, the GM does something just heinous. He says, we're going to send you on effectively a wild goose chase.
They're sending Napoleon to Corsica here.
And he starts naming these just tiny little towns in Mexico where no one has ever heard of, and baseball may or may not even be played there. And Al says, why don't you just fire me? And the GM says, I thought about that, but this is worse than that even. So now we see, what he says is, I would have rather sent you to a leper colony, but I think that's against the law. You know, as a kid, I really thought that there would be more leper colonies.
I mean, they still got them.
You know,
still exist. It's not like we don't have them. I don't know where the closest one is. We could probably Google it.
As a turn of phrase, you know, I felt like I heard that so much. I'm like, well, I really got to be careful for these leper colonies.
Well, we can also treat leprosy now.
We sure can. And I think we do.
And now it's just kind of like a hospital, not like a big fence. And they just like huck food over the walls periodically. Hope for the best.
But instead of sending Al there, they send him to Mexico. Now we see Al at his first baseball game in Mexico, sitting next to a man eating the leg of...
It's a pig.
It is a pig. It looks it's a large leg of a pig.
It's a foot. It's slathered in what I assume is hot sauce.
But it's more than just the foot. I mean,
it's like all of it. Like, we're talking almost the shoulder. It's more than a trotter, my friend.
Yeah, it is. And he keeps trying to offer it to Al,
which is a really funny bit. And every time Al tries to speak to him, the guy clearly doesn't speak in English. So he just offers him a bite of the pig foot, the pig leg. So he's a gentleman.
He is a gentleman. Al, though, rude, says, where I come from, that's a felony. You can't have that much pig leg.
Al's not known for his decorum.
Certainly not. We have a bit of a montage now to show how bad this particular part of Mexico and the quality of the baseball and the baseball games are. They're playing in the rain, a lot of rain. Too much rain.
Helps him slide.
He's on the bus. The bus is packed. They're driving through a minor forest fire type of situation. As minor as it could be. And eventually he shows up at a small hostel.
We had the pitcher taking a phone call, just kind of leaves the game.
There are a couple other funny things that happen. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the runner at third slides and he overslides third base and he ends up knocking over an elote stand.
That is right.
So I have a question about that. Is that cool? Might not be. That's a touchy one. The elote stand? That's low-hanging fruit, man.
It is. On field, low-hanging fruit. Off the field, as a concession, amazing.
I love it. It's possibly my favorite quick snack.
On the field, though, being able to be slid into in the baseball game,
probably not cool.
90% of the jokes in this movie are better than that. 90% of them. He gets to the hotel, the hostel. It's tiny. And he says he's a baseball scout. Al does to the
proprietor of said hotel. I don't know if he's the owner or whatever.
He says... Well, actually, before we get there, he has a little machine. He has a little translation machine, which this movie came out in 1994. I had never heard or seen this machine before. Seems very interesting.
Yeah, before you could type very basic phrases. It had these things had like 1,000 phrases in them. They were pretty slick. But now they're completely obsolete because we just have Google Translate on our phones. You could ask like very basic stuff. You know, like where's the bathroom? How do I get here? You could ask for directions and things. It's very simple if you were abroad.
Very, very cool. That was like a fun little piece of like obsolete technological history that I had no knowledge of before I watched this movie. It's like the little things like that you find in like older movies that you watch that are so interesting to me. But now we learn of one of the best named athletes in any movie ever, I think, potentially.
Way up there.
Steve Nebraska.
Fantastic name.
Steve Nebraska.
It's a solid baseball name. Like you know that baseball name. You're either going to be a baseball player or like a cowboy. Like that's the only two careers you have.
No in between.
No.
And before we actually meet Steve Nebraska, Al is calling up the GM and he's giving him reports of what is going on. This is where the second quote I had written down comes up. And, you know, the GM is asking him about the quality of the baseball that he's seen. He says, "Yesterday I saw a game played by 5 men, 2 women, a child, and a goat at third base." And the GM says, "Was the goat any good?" What a stupid joke. I love that one. But now we meet the other main character.
The other goat.
The other goat. The true goat, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that he actually is, without a doubt, the greatest baseball player who could ever exist. Doing some truly unfathomable baseball feats, which we will see. You want to give us a little, paint the picture of how we first meet Steve Nebraska.
There is a marching band, which it's, what is it? Like probably police, army band, something like that. Playing the Star Spangled Banner, and out comes a litter, a plinth. He is carried out wearing like a matador's cape. He's got his uniform on. He has all the pieces of flair on his hat, which I thought was kind of wild. He's got like 30 pins on the side of his hat, waving to his adoring public. The stands are packed. People are fawning over this guy. Alice is in disbelief at this point. Like, oh man, like this might be a real baseball player. Also, it should be noted that this is just a white guy. Like, this is a Caucasian man.
He looks just like you would think a dude named Steve Nebraska looks.
Yeah, he's got the long hair. He's a pretty boy.
This is prime hunk phase of Brendan Fraser. Prime hunk.
You weren't into the whale, Brendan Fraser? I know it was prosthetics.
Oh, that's tough, Chris. Hey, yeah. You know, this is...
Listen, my Brendan Fraser will always be from The Mummy.
See, and I'm going to give a little Brendan Fraser that's analogous to this movie even. How about a little George of the Jungle?
Ooh.
See?
That's a hunk.
That is a hunk big time, but like
big time hunk.
And that goes with what is about to happen, because after Al sees this performance that Mr. Nebraska is about to put on, he says to himself, "I found Kong." And as soon as he said that, I couldn't stop thinking about Brendan Fraser from George of the Jungle.
Brendan Fraser became George of the Jungle. just a short time later. Just a number of years.
It's crazy. Like, I was just thinking, I couldn't get that out of my mind while I was watching this movie. But break down for us this stellar performance by Mr. Nebraska here.
So I was watching, and he's got his scorebook, and he's ready. He's ready to take book on this game. And a hush falls over the crowd as Steve kind of like rocks back into his windup. And then he throws the single hardest pitch you've ever seen in your entire life that launches the catcher backwards for a strike. And Al like drops his pen in disbelief. And then, okay, maybe that was a one-off thing. Okay, second pitch. We get the catcher back up, gives him the ball. Winds up, bang, does it again. Another fastball, sends him flying backwards. Rolls to like comedic effect, but it's not a fluke. Steve Nebraska is in fact the real deal. He's throwing more than Ched. He is throwing that high stinky Limburger.
Just absolute gas. Straight petrol.
I mean, it's putting the catcher in danger.
Serious concern for the catcher's well-being. And then, side switch over. Now he's up at the plate.
And having a bat leadoff is wild.
Batting leadoff. Absolute megaton. Just hits a nuke.
First pitch, Gonzo. See you later.
I mean, different area code.
Yeah, but 470 feet.
This movie's basically about Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani checks under his bed every night for Steve Nebraska.
That is...
when Shohei grows up, that's who he wants to be.
We said that we think Shohei Ohtani became Shohei Ohtani because Field of Dreams won the Japanese Movie Award. How certain are we that Shohei Ohtani didn't become Shohei Ohtani because he saw The Scout?
I don't know the amount of the widespread release of The Scout in Japan, but I can look it up.
I was saying in the first episode that we'll spread that bit of misinformation, that that's why he became Shohei Ohtani, but I'm actually going to pivot here and perform a different grift, which is that he became Shohei because he watched The Scout now.
Do you think that Shohei is the Japanese equivalent of Steve?
I think that's what he should aspire to be.
Yeah, like Enrique is the equivalent of Hank. Do you think it's the same thing? Could be. I'm going to call Japan. I'm going to find out. I'm going to call the embassy.
Get them on the phone.
I'm a taxpayer. I can call the embassy.
That is true.
Right?
That is true. So now we have Al's having dinner a lot.
There's a lot of dinners in this movie. A lot of dinners.
I didn't realize until right now. There's a lot of sit down meals in this movie.
There's a lot of meals in this movie. Yes, a lot.
So Al's now he's slick talking Steve Nebraska. Now they're at dinner I guess technically all of the restaurants are Mexican restaurants because they are in Mexico. However, they are eating authentic Mexican food
in a taqueria.
He says, has anyone else ever come down here before? Has anyone else ever watched you play? And Steve Nebraska says, a while ago, this guy from Chicago came down here, but he got sick and he died. And Al has the only response that you could ever possibly have. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Truly divine intervention that this Cub Scout or this White Sox Scout has died.
This very well could have been the Sox at the time. Sox were a little spendier in the 90s.
That's true. However, now...
but yes, their loss is Al's gain.
We get introduced to what will end up being the main conflict in the movie, which is that Steve Nebraska... it's a little off kilter.
Yeah, he's not banging on all eight cylinders.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's a smart guy when it comes to baseball. He is, you know, fairly well adjusted, it seems, except every once in a while in social situations, he just goes a little bit off the rails. And in this particular scene.
And questions about his past very clearly make him uncomfortable.
He has a tortilla. And you just see him kind of biting it strangely as they're having these conversations about how...
He's nibbling at it.
He's nibbling. And, you know, Al's asking him about his family. He says, I don't really know about them. How did you get down to Mexico? Well, I don't really know how I got down here.
And no red flags for Al at this point.
I mean, Al couldn't care less, honestly, after seeing Steve play.
Right.
And as he's finishing answering these questions, he puts this mask on that he made out of the tortilla. He bites out two eye holes, a nose hole, and a mouth hole. He puts it over his face, starts talking to Al through that. And this is where we first start to see, okay, he is at best a bit of an odd duck here. At best.
He is quite literally masking his emotions with a taco mask.
Yeah, with a...
Or I guess a burrito mask because it was a bigger tortilla.
But... despite all this, despite the fairly clear red flags,
the arrested development bare minimum.
He agrees to play baseball for the New York Yankees. But as Al calls back the GM to tell him that he just got potentially the greatest baseball player who's ever lived, Al finds out he's been fired. He's done.
Yeah, he doesn't trust Al to find another talent, and he thinks he's bullshitting him. So he says, you know what? Take a hike, bud.
And his at this current point in time, his tenure with the New York Yankees is terminated. But Al, old Al, resourceful guy, without a doubt. He pulls every string, calls in every favor that he has left in the biz. And he's going to get a little bit of a tryout going. Now we do a little bit of character building here. We see the two on the flight back from Mexico to New York. And Steve's not handling it very well. Not handling it very well.
He doesn't have a fear of flying, which is nice.
No fear of flying. But very little regard for normal social cues and how to handle yourself in public. He is singing on the plane out loud with his headphones on.
Quite loudly. We kind of get the indication this is the first time he's ever had headphones on.
I have in my notes here, ludicrous on plane. I mean, he's just acting wild.
He is acting a damn fool.
And then I have this guy is crazy.
Yeah.
After
that. And at this point, I think Al is starting to realize that he might be crazy also.
And the outcome of all of this is that the flight attendant gives Steve Nebraska her phone number, which is a bit of a common theme for Mr. Nebraska.
Yeah, he does pretty well for himself.
So common, in fact, that he has a box of phone numbers, even though he lacks all social awareness.
Just a cigar box full of phone numbers.
He's just that much of a hunk. He's just that nice at ball. That's it.
And you can be as crazy as you want to, as long as you're a hunk that's nice at ball. And I think we can all learn from that.
That's what I try to live my life by. Now, I have a quote written down here. I forget exactly where this happens, but I thought it was like it said very tongue in cheek, and I like you could easily not catch it, but it was great. Al at one point says, "People always believe the first thing they hear," right? And he's very clearly kind of doing a, this includes you, Steve Nebraska, because I told you you're going to be the superstar of the MLB and the greatest baseball player that ever lived, which...
Yeah, almost immediately.
You know, I think Al does at least a little bit believe that, and he needs that to happen. Right. But mostly he was just selling it to Steve.
It's not really that hard to sell. Like, we did see Steve Nebraska play baseball, and he almost threw it through the catcher.
Yeah, he's got some high heat. We get to New York. Steve is staying with Al in his modest apartment,
which Steve is very impressed by. His huge apartment.
Huge. He said he's going to love New York. And then we see Steve have a couple of nightmares that night when he's sleeping.
I think we could get into the night terrors part of this.
It's borderline for sure. It's enough as to where it concerns Al pretty deeply.
Yeah, it wakes up Al. Like, there's a lot of screaming involved, like troubling things, and it's clearly like, "Hey, come back! Wait, stop! Don't!" Like scary things.
Things that you certainly don't want to hear anybody saying while they're having a nightmare night terror, let alone the guy who you are staking your whole entire reputation on being the greatest baseball player ever.
Yeah. So now we have what? Abandonment issues. Arrested development questions make him incredibly uncomfortable to the point where he wears a taco mask.
Yeah, he is very unwilling to open up and maybe not even just unwilling, but he has no knowledge or recollection of what he could even open up about.
Right.
He seems to have just blocked out everything that could be answered by these questions.
I also want to give credit to this movie for being kind of a wacky 90s comedy. It doesn't treat Steve's like mental, like clear, like, you know, mental issues here as comedy. Like there's some weight to them. Like it's deeply unsettling.
It's quite unsettling. And later on, we'll get introduced to basically the third main character of the movie, who is his therapist, who plays a huge role. But before we get there, now we have the tryout. We have Mr. Nebraska in Yankee Stadium. All the scouts are there. Alice called in every favor. And we have a couple cameos here.
Couple good ones.
We see the first is going to be pitching. So Steve Nebraska first is going to show off the old arm. He comes out in sweatpants and just the most beat Keds you've ever seen in your entire life.
His Henley, so you know he's a baseball player.
It is like the little Spirit Halloween baseball going on.
He's dressed like a little rascal. Like he would have fit right in the Sandlot.
And he is dressed very Sandlot-esque.
Right.
And who is taking some swings? Who is he pitching this AB to? These live ABs.
Mr. Good Game Pretty Boy himself, Keith Hernandez. Star power right off the bat.
And again, we have a little bit of a run back from what happened in Mexico. He comes up, first pitcher, just blows the catcher backwards. Like, serious concern for the well-being of these catchers here. Like, is the equipment strong enough? Like, are you able to withstand this amount of force? Yeah,
can somebody catch him realistically?
And we find out that this is the first time we see a radar gun. I think this one was clocked in.
But there's a problem because the radar gun's clearly broken because it said he was throwing 7 and 9.
Yeah. At 67.9. He says it's way faster than that. And Al walks up very smugly and says, well, yeah, I mean, it goes over 100. It rolls the numbers back. He's throwing 109 miles an hour.
The fastest recorded pitch is what, 104?
I think there's some debate over exactly if it's in the 104 to 106 range. There's some debate over how accurate.
I believe it's Chapman has the fastest, right? There's some debate on to like what Nolan Ryan's fastball was because they measure fastballs differently. But from in the modern era, the contemporary, not the modern. The contemporary, I think it's Aroldis Chapman, 104. So he is blowing him out of the water.
And this is sweats and Keds, no warm-ups. He does not warm up.
It says he doesn't have to.
He does.
And he doesn't.
Steve Nebraska really doesn't have to warm up. And he's throwing gas. So then Al says, this is a spectacle. However, he can do more than just throw. He can hit as well. Who is throwing the live AB to him?
Probably some bozo, right?
You thought. We're just stacking the baseball cast with stars here.
Stars.
The star of this live AB. He's going to get up and show everybody that Steve Nebraska can't actually hit. He's going to sit him down. Brett Saberhagen.
Great get.
What a pull that is. What an absolute pull that is. And Steve shows off a little bit of something that we didn't know he had in him. He gets up. He's batting righty. Nuke. I mean, he's just putting him out easy.
Saberhagen's already visibly frustrated.
Can I switch? Can I go over to the other side of the plate? And, I mean, he's just dropping bombs from the other side of the plate as well. So now not only is he throwing gas, not only is he absolutely mashing from his dominant side, he has equal power both sides of the plate, mashing both sides of the plate.
Unheard of. Unheard of. And clearly, like, the Yankees at this point already had the greatest switch hitter of all time. And he's now you got Steve Nebraska, who's just way better. The Yankees all he does had, is throw strikes and kill catchers and just crush nukes. That's it.
The Yankees had Cal Raleigh at this point.
Well, that's if we had a time machine. This was circa 1994. Before the big dumper. Way to go, Cal. I'm proud of you, man. What a great season. You're my MVP.
100%, dude. 100%.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Judge is a stud, but like, come on, man.
Catching 100 and how many games?
Right. Almost all of them, which is crazy.
Listen.
And going almost 50-50 from both sides of the plate, like splitting them that way. That's pretty nuts.
Crazy.
You, Cal. Proud of you, buddy. He said, you're my MVP. Love you.
I know he's listening.
He's a big fan. He's going to like this. He listens to Jabbo. He's a jobber.
He's for sure a jobber, and he's going to be listening to this.
I'm going to tag him.
Tag Cal in this.
I'm tagging Cal in this. Put a timestamp on it.
You see his new commercial? Big Dumper Plumbing?
It's sick, dude.
Oh, my God. It's cash money, man. So now we have a bit of an odd process here because technically Steve Nebraska is a free agent. We see Al kind of acting as his agent, his manager, his dad, which we'll soon kind of talk about here. And we also see the first appearance of the big boss himself, George Steinbrenner.
I can't believe they got Steinbrenner to play himself in a movie.
And honestly, like, he's really likable in the movie.
Yeah, no, like, I believe he used the word good sport. Like, yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah, like Steinbrenner's not just like George Steinbrenner. Like, he's in the movie. It's not just like, I'm George Steinbrenner, I'm going to sit in the background. No, he's like, he's part of it, and he like, gives a shit, and it's awesome.
Yeah, he has, like, multiple key lines, decisions made in the movie. Like, he is very much so a character in the movie. Like, yeah. You might have to like bill him fifth in the movie.
Yeah, probably.
It's like outside of Al, Steve Nebraska, the therapist who is yet to be named, who we will talk about soon, and the GM who we talked about. It's like Steinbrenner.
Yeah, probably. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. There's really not that many characters in this movie, but he's got more screen time than just about any of them.
Yeah, it's wild. So there's a bidding process going on here. Every team places a kind of a blind bid on how much of a contract they're going to offer Steve Nebraska.
A little unorthodox, but I do kind of like the silent auction idea.
It is pretty fun. And obviously, the team with the fleet of Brinks trucks, the team with the unlimited bank, at least in 1994, the Yankees win the bid. And I always thought this was interesting. The largest contract ever at the time, they say in the movie. I didn't fact check this.
I did a little digging. The largest contract was Juan Gonzalez at $30.7 million, and the highest AAV was Bobby Bonilla at $6.3 million. This is the largest contract in baseball. It would have been the largest contract in baseball history at the time, $55 million.
$55 million over 4 years. So that blows $30.7 million out of the water.
That's a big contract today.
I mean, that makes Juan Gonzalez
for a rookie contract. Like, that's
broke boy. I mean, that's unreal. That's
Juan,
crazy.
Juan don't get a seat at the table anymore.
Man,
there's a stipulation. There are a pair of stipulations that come with this big payday. This comes at the press conference where things don't necessarily go Steve's way. Steve, as we addressed before, does not really care for questions. At one point, picks up a photographer and body slams him.
Al says, I told him to do it. But it was clear that he was just so overwhelmed from being asked so many questions, he couldn't handle all of that attention, all of that pressure. Which is not great for your newly signed $55 million contract.
Not for the $55 million man.
The stipulations were that he will not pitch this season.
Unless
the most unlikely thing were to happen, spoiler alert, it happens.
Sure does.
The Yankees were to make the World Series. And then in that case, and this is kind of crazy, by the way, he'll start game one of the World Series.
Correct.
Which, like, why not the second game?
Completely bananas that they just went for that.
So you can tell he's apprehensive about, well, I don't want to pitch this year. I'm not prepared mentally to do so.
He's not a big practice guy. It's not like this is clearly in season, so it's not like we're getting spring training in him. He's not getting stretched out.
No, it is. It's midway through the season. And Al says that'll never happen. There's no way they make the World Series. Again, spoiler alert, they obviously do. That's how this movie exists. Okay.
Correct.
But now management wants a little insurance on their end.
You can't be body slamming dudes.
They say, this guy seems like he has a little bit off. He has a couple screws loose.
He's got a little Tommy Pham in him.
He's got a little Tommy Pham.
A little touch of Tommy in him.
And they said, we need a letter from a qualified, certified healthcare professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, etc., who clears him to be able to play professional baseball. Now we're going to go on a little bit of a quest to get this letter. I have a quote written down that I actually am not going to talk about because it is in poor taste. But if you watch the movie, Al makes a bit of a remark about this. But they find a doctor and this is a bit of a throwback too. When's the last time you looked at a phone book?
Yeah, he's going through the yellow pages, which I don't think that exists anymore, right? There's no way.
I think they just do it for fun now.
There's no way. Like, yeah, I don't know if anybody's ever like held a phone book. They're huge.
Yeah, they are.
And they used to just like throw them on the ground in front of your house periodically. Wild, man. But like yellow pages were, like they were, 1,200 pages.
It's the amount of information.
Imagine looking at one in New York. Like they were that big in Pittsburgh.
The amount of information that you could get from about somebody.
They printed it in a book and threw it at your house.
Name, number, address?
Right.
You got to pay top dollar for that now.
And like you didn't even consent to that. It was just that you had to pay to not have your name in the phone book.
I mean, that is.
Which feels like extortion. So here's a question. Is that cool?
I'm going to take my stand right now and I'm going to put, if I'm out of line, reel me back in. But I'm going to put our stamp of disapproval. And this is from just a bit outside. And I'll say it, Bucko Banter as well. We're going to take a firm and staunch anti-phone book stance right now.
It's wasteful. If nothing else, think of the trees.
How do they even get the pages that thin? It doesn't even make sense.
No. They're up to something. This goes all the way to the top.
It goes all the way to the top.
Think about it. Think about it.
Now you just have foreign governments basically buying everybody's information because you click yes on TikTok and Instagram. So,
it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. At this point, like whatever. Somebody's already got my information. They can have it.
But he's scanning and he finds a mental health professional, board certified, Harvard graduate, Dr. H. Aaron.
Hammer and Hank.
He calls the office. It, in fact, is not Dr. Hank Aaron, but it's a woman. And it catches Al a little bit off guard here, but he does end up developing a nice respect for Dr. Aaron. And I forget her. What is her first name? I forget it.
I have absolutely no idea. I don't remember at all.
It is only said once in the movie, and it is said by Steve at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They set up an appointment. They go to the office, and Al needs to make sure that she is certified, qualified. He's looking at the wall. He finds a diploma. It says Harvard on it. He said, is that real? Did you go to Harvard? And then he says, well, you can't hang up a diploma that's not yours. That's a felony, isn't it? Now, by count, this is the third hypothetical situation that a character in this movie has said, that's against the law, that's a crime, that's a felony. We are...
Hey, well, these people aren't lawyers.
In my legal opinion, they are not lawyers. And that would be giving someone or eating a whole pig leg. That is a felony, apparently, according to Al. So is hanging up a diploma that is not yours. And according to the GM, sending somebody to a leper colony to scout for baseball is also a crime. Those are the three crimes we've learned about so far. So we have a discussion now about how we're going to get this letter. There's a bit of a psych eval that goes on here. Not quite like a Rorschach test, but a series of images that Dr. Aaron shows to Steve to get his take on things, get a snapshot of his mental to understand maybe why he's been having or exhibiting some of these strange behaviors. Doesn't go well.
Not great.
It goes quite poorly, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it gets borderline troublesome. It starts off as like whimsical, and then it's like, oh, maybe he has like a child's mind. And it's like, okay, this is pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's a man standing at the edge of a building. He says, well, that's just Batman. He's not wearing his bat suit. There's a woman exiting a theater and she's very clearly crying. He's like, well, she's just sneezing, right? Like he does not grasp emotions. He doesn't grasp things of that nature. And then it ends on a picture of an older gentleman and a child fishing. And he says, well, that's just, you know, I forget exactly what his response is.
He kind of stops short of giving an answer. So it's, which is even more worrisome, you know, where he just kind of clams up and then like kind of ends the conversation at that.
And he leaves the room. Dr. Aaron asks Al to stay and says, this guy has some serious trauma going on here. He, you know, 90 some percent of the individuals that are given this test, they recognize that as a father and son, but he has not recognized that. And Al says, that looks like a fishing teacher, which is a great line, I think. And she says, no, this is serious. This is concerning. He could be of great danger to somebody who he feels is a father figure. She believes that this is due to an abusive father, a traumatic incident in his childhood pertaining to his father.
It certainly explains the abandonment issues. And
Al asks the most salient question that you could ever ask at a time like this. How does he feel about his uncles? And then he opens the door as he's leaving and he says, come on, Steve, Uncle Al's going to take you back to the apartment. But I will say, like you said before, I think it handles those issues fairly well.
It does, where it's, you know, it doesn't make light of the issues. It does make jokes about Steve, or not Steve being unable to handle this, but Al being either unable or unwilling to accept any of this. Because the whole time he's asking for the letter that says that Steve can play baseball because, you know, it's going to guarantee his contract. But as now, we can tell, like, Steve is clearly getting paid, because one of the runners in this is every time you see Steve back at the apartment from the press conference where he body slams the guy on, there's more and more dumb stuff. So he's just wantonly spending this money. At one point, he's just wearing ski boots just inside.
There's a bit of a, you know, the next few scenes, I would say, are kind of showing again the extent of his inability to understand social situations and how flustered he gets when presented with attention and questions and things of that nature.
Yeah, and it's you know, coupled with what you said, it's also his like kind of meteoric rise to fame. Even though he hasn't thrown a single pitch or swung a bat, Everybody knows this guy's name, and Steve doesn't really know how to handle this, and he doesn't really accept it at first either.
He is the talk of the town.
They love him in New York City. The Big Easy, they call it.
That's it. So
the Windy City.
The City New of York. Wind.
Beantown.
So, he's living. That could be Chicago if you think about it. Okay. He's living with Al. The paparazzi are outside. They're at the window. They're looking up. There's flashbulbs going off. There's 15, 20 reporters outside, paparazzi reporters, all trying to get a glimpse of what's going on.
And just trying to take a peek.
Just a little peek.
Just a glimpse.
And they're not getting it.
Not even getting a crumb of Nebraska.
But he looks out and he is upset with this. So Steve starts to take Al's plates. And Al's not a guy that seems like he has a lot.
Yeah, it's not the most well-appointed, one bedroom New York City walk up.
And he's frisbeeing these bad boys out the window.
He's nice with those plates too. Like Brendan Fraser's really good at and it's quick. Bang, bang,
he's
bang.
Doing one of these guys, like a little underhand. Sidearm. I mean, if he didn't go pro in the bigs, he would easily have a future in ultimate frisbee, without a doubt.
Or frisbee golf. I'll bet he'd be a decent disc golfer.
Also, Steve Nebraska, great baseball name. Steve Nebraska as a disc golfer name?
Forget
about jeepers, dude. Are you kidding me? He'd be the go-off name alone. And now Al's getting actually concerned. He's like, oh my God, this is coming true. What Dr. Aaron has said, like, this guy could be dangerous to me. And he's trying to say, stop it, stop it. He's trying to take his mind away from the paparazzi, trying to settle him down as much as possible. And it's not, necessarily
hide the knives.
The hiding of the knives is great. Steve says he wants a knife to cut something up, and Al is doing his darndest to hide every knife that he has in the house.
They make an excuse. He's like, you don't need a knife. We're having spaghetti.
He gives him a butter knife. And Steve says, I don't want butter.
he's like grasping a knife behind his back.
And he says, we're going to have to do something about this. The paparazzi, the press will not stop. We have to set up a tell-all press conference. And they're going to coach him through it, which this is one of my favorite lines here too. He says, well, I'll tell you what to say. He goes, this is going to be just like the president. You think he knows what to say? He wakes up a fool. Amazing. So they're going to coach. He wakes up a fool. They're going to tremendous line. The delivery on all of these is just spectacular.
Like I said, it's the only way Albrecht can do it.
Kills it. They're going to coach Steve through this, press conference. Simultaneously, Al goes to the doctor, talks to Dr. Aaron, who says Steve just has to start coming to therapy by himself. Previously, Al was going with him. Now it just has to be a Dr. Aaron and Steve thing. So we have at this point, let me see here. Yeah, we have the press conference at this point. He lies all through the press conference, hilariously telling the tallest of tales.
It says he's from the Mideast.
The Mideast.
He meant to say Midwest, and then he said he spent a lot of time in the Middle East.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Egypt. Dr. Aaron sees the press conference, displeased.
Not happy. Doesn't love it.
Not healthy behavior. Take a little bit of a departure from the baseball and the mental health stuff now. Everyone's going to go see Tony Bennett, who also plays a bit of a... He might be the sixth on the billing.
Maybe. It is. It's very much Tony Bennett playing himself. And it's just Tony Bennett. And he's amazing.
He's amazing. He's crushing. they do a bit of a, hey, everybody, Steve Nebraska's here seeing Tony Bennett. Let's give him a round of applause, a standing ovation. And I get it's a...
Steve doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to. So finally, they get him up.
I get a tremendous amount of, like, secondhand embarrassment. Like, I hate things like what is about to happen. I had to, like, pause the movie and, like, get up and, like, walk around. I'm like, this is brutal.
You had to shake it off. You had to rub some dirt on it.
I did. What happens is Steve starts to sing the closer of the show. Mm-hmm. Tony, displeased.
Not having it.
Displeased.
You can't show up and mow Tony Bennett's lawn. I'll tell you that right now.
Al, also displeased. However, everyone else is singing along. They're having a great time. Made me cringe tremendously.
It should also be noted that all of Brendan Fraser's singing in this is grossly off key.
Oh, brutal.
He sings throughout the entire movie, and it's just terrible. Like, just that's another songs, great runner.
Making up stuff here and there. Yeah. Good improv skills. Bad at singing.
Bad at singing. Perhaps another way that he's masking his emotions is through song. True.
So they're in the limo. They're coming back from the show, and there's a little bit of a challenge between Al and Steve at this point. Steve wants to stay out with a friend who accompanied them to the show. Al says, we have practice in the morning. You should go to sleep. They have a bit of a challenge here. Steve raises his voice. He gets in Al's face. He says, you can't tell me what to do. I'm the Yankee, not you. And then he leaves.
A little bit of a lash out. Kicks him out of the limo.
He leaves. And then we cut to Al in the laundry room, reading a magazine. And another runner here is that Steve just loves to eat. He's always eating all the
constantly
time.
Constantly eating.
Constantly. It's all the time.
We also don't. We have no idea how old Steve Nebraska is. That's never covered at any point. But it's like, is he potentially a growing boy? We don't know. He's just hungry a lot.
He's hungry. And he walks into the laundry room where Al is eating a chocolate baseball bat.
With a red ribbon on it.
With a red ribbon on it. Which is just hilarious. And they have a bit of a heart-to-heart. He apologizes. Steve talks about how much he loves laundry. And they have a bit of a birds and the bees talk at this point as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was out. He stayed out late at night with a woman. And he says, hey, you know, you have to be cautious out here. You're the superstar. You're the talk of the town. You have to use protection. This is New York City. You're not back in Mexico. Which is just a heater of a line, I think. Like that was another, like, to me, a laugh out loud. Because it's delivered so tongue-in-cheek. Like, it's really like Al delivers it as the most genuine thing he could possibly ever think. I mean, it's... And then Steve shows some genuine concern for pitching in the World Series. And he follows it up with another incredible line here. It says, the doorman says it's a shoo-in. And Al says, the doorman is a man with an animal's brain. Just ludicrous.
His zingers in this movie are very, very good.
They're unbelievable. Now we cut to practice the next day in the morning. Give us a set the scene for this practice.
So it's an indoor practice because it's in a parking garage. So it remains unclear as to why he's never at like a baseball facility. He has signed a contract with the Yankees. He is a member of the organization. You'd figure that, you know, he could be pitching at one of their facilities, possibly in Tampa. I believe they were still there at the time. You go to Florida and you'll get better at baseball. But no, they go to a parking garage. And Al is the catcher. So to defend himself from Steve's incredibly potent fastball, it's just him behind a giant I-beam with just the glove sticking out. And every time Al talks, he kind of wiggles the glove a little bit. And it's just a great bit. So it's like, that's how you know he's talking.
That cracked me up. It was just, there's so many little stupid, charming, extreme, like these little things here that give the movie just a ton of character.
I think it's got the, like, not quite like all in the family level of comedy, but it's kind of like that. It's a little bit of ribbing, maybe Mama's Family. Let's go Mama's Family in this one.
It's great. So he doesn't want to pitch. He's not feeling it. He wants to go get some eggs. It's fumey in there. A lot of fumes going on.
He keeps saying, it's the fumes. It's fumes in there. Misses with a fastball, and it ricochets off at like 9 different. I mean, you get a pew, 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 before finally shattering a car window.
Classic.
And it storms off. Like, it gets, so we're not doing well handling adversity here. So there's another crack in the psyche of Steve Nebraska.
Then we see Al with Dr. Aaron, and it is confirmed at this point that this is all some form of, you know, blocking out his past, PTSD, something along those lines, because Steve had an abusive father, which Al is very concerned about, but he is just completely oblivious to the work that goes into fixing this. He says, I mean, how long does that stuff take to fix? A week? More? A week?
When he says a week, it's a very good line.
It's just, like, the delivery that we're doing here couldn't even begin to do justice to his performance in this movie. But alas, the Bronx Bombers do in fact win the pennant.
They're watching game 7, I believe it is, of the ALCS. It's the Yankees versus the Tigers, the Motor City Kitties.
And got the hat on.
I noticed the hat. It's Mickey Tettleton is at the plate. Great hitter. Had one of the funniest batting stances of all time. And had the bat like cocked out at the side. Always big side whack. Like, he liked his chaw. And what do you know? Base is loaded. Tettleton's at the plate. Bottom of the ninth. Goes down swinging. And Steve or Al is praying in the background for Tettleton to get the hit. But yeah, so this is the impossible has happened in a way that only celluloid can deliver.
And this now is where we really see things go off the rails, because he says, you know, he's making a frozen pizza at this point, and he says, here, Steve, I made your favorite late night snack. And Steve delivers the line, I'm not hungry. And now we know it's gone seriously backwards here.
Yeah, this is even Al knows that this is not particularly good for anyone.
It's bad news. But this, here we are,
the point where Al is mostly concerned with almost entirely with Steve the baseball player. Yeah. You know, not Steve the person, but Al is now, like, his concern is his career is on the line, and it's about, can he perform? Not, is he okay?
He's getting flashbacks to Lacey. His whole entire reputation is on the line. He's done if this does not work out.
Right. He just wants to find Kong.
That's it. So we cut to Yankees Stadium. Game 1 of the World Series. This part just looks so weird to me, because Steve Nebraska is in a Yankees uniform with long hair.
Right.
It is so odd looking, so strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, you know, they recently just, like, were more lax on their rules about grooming, like, this year, and everyone's still, like, super.
Was it this year or last year? I know it was very recently.
Yeah, it might have been last year.
They changed their facial hair policy for a reliever that had, like, an ERA north of 6, which was really funny.
You know, it's the year of our Lord 2025. In like 90s era baseball, seeing Steve Nebraska long hair in a Yankees uniform was just so strange.
Extremely. I think there were still 3 teams at the time that had no facial hair or long hair.
That's really odd. But he's you think he's going to pitch. He's standing in line. They're about to play the national anthem. We do get a beautiful cameo here from before we see the national anthem. We get Bob Costas in here and McCarver. And they're calling the game.
This is a real game. Those were the broadcasters. That's who would have had the postseason.
I mean, it's their calls are awesome. And who comes up to sing the national anthem? None other than Mr. You guessed it, Tony Bennett.
Love that. You already paid Tony. You know, you don't want to pay two guys.
But it, you know, it further kind of goes to show, like, oh, the last time we saw Mr. Bennett didn't go too hot.
No.
And it also does not go too hot right here either.
It does not.
Steve just leaves the line while they're singing the national anthem. And we see one of the Yankees bench coaches here, played by J.K. Simmons, which is also a nice little, not a cameo per se, but a nice little minor role for Mr. Simmons there. Steve's outie. No one knows where he is. This next part is like maybe the most unrealistic part of the movie, I think. Which is what Al does when he's trying to find Steve Nebraska. He runs on the field during game one of the World Series. Like, he's running all over the field. He goes to the back where the bullpen is. He grabs the binoculars. What does he see?
He sees the silhouetted outline of a man, not on the baseball field, but on the roof of Yankee Stadium.
Like, all, is it even possible to get up there?
You would think. I mean, you can get on the roof of PNC Park. It's not easy. They don't make it easy to get to, but like, I wouldn't say it's easily accessible, but we're not dealing with a normal human here. We're dealing with Steve effing Nebraska.
He just needs some fresh air. So he goes all the way to the top. Quite scary.
Incredibly. As somebody who's afraid of heights, I don't like this part of the movie.
No. But how do they play this off? How does Steinbrenner play this off? How did the Yankees play this off? How does Al play this off? They come up with a little bit of a scheme, a little bit of a promotion.
Al goes into damage control mode.
And what is their little harebrained scheme that they come up with here?
Well, in a way to kind of camouflage just how incredibly dangerous this is, and as a way to get him down faster, he charters the team helicopter that apparently every baseball team has. This is as he's flying around in a golf cart. He charters the helicopter. Get the bird in the air. It's like the end of Predator.
And this is now turned into what they are selling as a publicity stunt, because there could be no grander entrance for Steve Nebraska.
And the game should have been going on for about 20 minutes at this point. So people are kind of expecting something to happen. Not necessarily that a man might do something incredibly rash at the top of a very tall structure.
Al eventually gets up there and
through a conveniently located access panel that is just like unlocked.
Yeah, just a straight ladder up to the roof. There's some guy like, hey, what are you doing up there? And he just goes up the elevator, up the access panel. And Al, I'm going to say it. He's being a real dick.
Yeah.
He's being a meanie.
Yeah, it's kind of, like I said, it's come to a head where Al is only worried about his, you know, his legacy here. Like this, like his ass is on the line, his career, money. You know, which is a very upsetting part. But he's not at all worried about Steve, even knowing full well Steve is not well. And he's not doing well with therapy, even though he was close to having a breakthrough. Everything Al has kind of done is counterintuitive. And it's kind of setting everything back. And he still doesn't care at this point, because now he's looking at his... you know, our foreshadowing with Kong is Kong's at the top of the Empire State Building right now. And it's, and if you've ever watched King Kong, because God knows Al has, it, he doesn't climb down. You know, it doesn't go well for Kong whenever he's at the top of the Empire State Building. Sorry, spoiler alert, but the movie came out in the 30s. You should have seen it by now.
It's true. But instead of taking the knowledge that Al has from Dr. Aaron about Steve's past, the knowledge he has of how serious the situation is. I mean, he's standing on top of Yankee Stadium. He just really goes into like an aggressive argument with Steve about all the things he's throwing away, and it's his reputation on the line and his money, and we're both going to be arrested and this couldn't be worse. And he should just go and pitch, you're a professional ball player. You need to perform whether or not you want to perform. And he makes a comment saying, at the height of the conflict right here, he says, Al says something along the lines of, you know, they make a comment about his dad. And Al says, but I'm not your dad. I'm just a guy taking 15%.
Isn't it 10%? Not 10% for the first 6 months, then it bumps up.
Then it bumps up. At the pinnacle of like the height of this argument, they just shoehorn in just a heater of a line. It's awesome.
Just a guy taking 15%. Such a good moment. And it's, but all, like, that's kind of what shakes Al out of it. And you know, like that line hits home. He was like, oh God, like it was that, you know what, man, maybe some things are bigger than 15%.
And Steve says, what's the worst that could happen? You know, that line, it's a joke.
He tells him, yeah, first Al tells him, like, if you don't want to pitch, you don't got to hell with it. Like, let's get out of here. You and me, we'll be broke, but whatever. Let's get the hell out of here. And then
he says, what's the worst that could happen?
Well, I like when Steve looks down and goes, well, who else is going to pitch if I don't do it? Where he's like worried about the rest of the team and roster. Because they're like, well, who else are they going to have pitch?
And they're like, well, the worst thing that could happen is you'll lose. And then game two is going to happen regardless. It's like, well, I guess that's not that bad. And yeah,
half the guys down there lose every night, which is an unbelievable baseball thing. You know, the baseball is a sport that everybody said will humble you. It's steeped in disappointment and failure. But to think of that, like, yeah, man, like, if you're a baseball player, half of you are going to lose. But just, yeah, just the way he, like, the, you know, it's almost childlike. There's an innocence to Steve Nebraska. And that line will, half those guys down there lose every day. It puts a lot into perspective. And, it, you know, it's, we're at the point now where, like, you know, maybe sports and money aren't the most important thing in the world.
So that's it. He's doing it. He's gonna pitch.
And it's a good thing the helicopter was there, because it lowers a ladder, which we see him like take the first couple rungs of, and they're like, oh yeah, he climbed up inside. We don't really see that because there's not an actual helicopter in the movie because they couldn't afford it. And you can't like fly a helicopter into a baseball stadium. They don't like when you do that, and I get that.
The landing of this helicopter,
it is very 1994 CGI.
It looks like CGI came out the day before they made this. It looks crazy.
The crazy thing about it is one of the worst looking things I've ever seen in my entire life. And at this time, like, Jurassic Park was in theaters, which is still one of the best looking films of all time.
That was literally my same exact thought process. Right. I like, love Jurassic Park.
It looked
Park.
Like the 70s. Like, bad. The Tron-ass looking helicopter.
Dude, it's the bad. The scale is off. The helicopter looks way too big.
It's really, I mean, it's just fast in its descent.
It looks like something that you would just make with like Windows Movie Maker, like your first time ever doing it.
It's not good. It is not
brutal
good.
Brutal stuff. But he's on the mound now. I mean, it's laughably bad. I'm so glad you said Jurassic Park, because that was the first thing that popped into my head was like, right, Jurassic Park is out.
Right. We had already seen Jurassic Park by this point.
If they put a T-Rex on the field, it would have looked more believable.
Correct. The Jurassic, and I just want to go on record by saying the T-Rex in Jurassic Park still looks better than just about anything you've ever seen in a movie, maybe outside of like Avatar, where or something where they didn't create wild new technology for it.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. So
it looks so bad, dude. It is so funny. There's no way to not notice it. It is jarring.
I literally ran it back three times because I'm like, am I tripping? Like, there's no way it's this bad.
It's the only part of the movie I like really don't like.
It's like the rest of the movie is like a little off kilter, but it's charming and there's a lot of charisma. And like you just see that and you're like, wow, this is just gross. it's not good. It's not good. But he's on the mound now. He lands from the helicopter.
Yeah, he hops out. Probably. We don't see it because he's just like, you know, and helicopter. And then it's just him. And he's out. He's out there. He's ready. No warm-up.
Nothing. And he's
and nobody throwing. Outside of, like, the scouts, George Steinbrenner, and, like, who the hell was there? Keith Hernandez and... Who the hell else was pitching? We were talking about we had Juan Gonzalez in there earlier. Who the hell was pitching to him? Saberhagen. Yeah. Those are like the only people that know what he's capable of. Like, there's no sizzle reel, there's no highlights for him. It was in Mexico. There was a guy eating a pig arm. It's not like they were streaming this.
Not at all. Man. So he gets up and he does the Steve Nebraska thing. First two batters. Six pitches, mows him down.
I think crowd's he throws going insane.
106. And then the third batter gets up. And this is the best cameo outside of Steinbrenner, I think. Because they're like, we got to make the height of the baseball conflict be a household name.
And buddy, this isn't the third batter. This is the 27th batter.
Oh, you're right. I thought it was at the end of the first inning.
Nope.
At this point, you are correct. He's already struck out the side, hit an absolute just moonshot.
Yeah, over the bleachers.
He proceeds to – I totally forgot about that. He proceeds to, at this point, they're going into the bottom of the – or they're going into the top of the ninth inning. And – he has 26 strikeouts on 78 pitches. He has struck out thus far every single batter on three pitches in the whole game.
In the World Series.
Game one. And the final batter.
In his first professional baseball game
ever.
Moreover.
After he was just on the roof, landed by helicopter, the final batter is none other than, they're playing the cards, by the way, the Wizard of Oz, Ozzie Smith. There's some dude just laying on his horn outside my apartment right now. I hope that's not getting picked up.
I can hear it a little bit.
It's fine. He is just so excited. Ozzie Smith, who is hitting crazily in this particular fictional World Series, five home runs in the last five games, which when did that ever happen?
Heater. I mean, it was like, didn't Max Muncy do something like that for the Dodgers a couple years ago? Like, there's always somebody on the Dodgers who all of a sudden just could pound the shit out of the ball.
Pretty tell you who wasn't
did it, but
Ozzie Smith
wasn't. Ozzie, great ball player, didn't hit five straight home runs in the World Series. But this is big on big.
Big on big. Strike. The last pitch of the game, he winds up, delivers a 112-mile-an-hour fastball that, in like true Three Stooges fashion, rolls the catcher back that like is a bowling ball.
Completes like somersault.
Splat. Into the umpire.
Yeah, they both go. They're both tumbling.
And the umpire says, what was that? Catcher says, I think it was a strike. And the umpire calls him out from the ground. on the ground. Perfect.
Why game. Do we need the ABS system, man?
Don't even get me started.
He would have thrown right through that. That would have been going through. He would have put that in a spin cycle.
Perfect game. 27 outs, 27 Ks, 81 pitches.
An immaculate game.
An immaculate game. No wasted pitches. Love the ending. It's so stupidly ludicrous.
Yes.
And then it's over.
And it ends. That's it. They lift him up on his shoulders. And the movie's over.
There's no, like, reconvening feel good. Like, I'm glad I talked you off the ledge. Nah, none of that.
None of that. None, like, showing them, like hugging or anything. Because Al's just watching the game.
Yep.
Watching Steve Nebraska throw the single greatest feat in the history of modern sport. If I would have watched this game on television, I would have died. I would have been so excited that I would have died. Even though it's the Yankees, and I can't root for the American League.
The fact that just like this movie is about like a blossoming father-son type relationship, Steve Nebraska getting over all of his childhood trauma to finally like fulfill his legacy of being the greatest baseball player ever. It's very charming. And at the end, he just does the damn thing. And they're like, all right, he's a god now.
This is it. He is that good. Everything's
just
fine.
Done. Roll credits.
Because he's a hunk who is nice at ball.
They just roll the credits.
It's so just crazy. Ends. It is. That is a wild part of the movie. Because the movie's not about baseball.
We haven't even mentioned about how the baseball looks in this movie, which is fine because it looks terrible.
It's not good because there's very little of it.
There's very little of it, and all of it is Brendan Fraser with the worst windup ever, and then ball is coming out at 112 miles.
It's so bad.
Like, they didn't even think to tell him about how the mechanics work, but we will get into that. Before we do our transition here into our cool down, we got to tell you who sponsored this week's episode. And we did a little bit of foreshadowing, but this week's episode is brought to you by the Spaghetti Briefcase. Are you Italian? Are you distraught at the idea of ever being caught without your spaghetti?
Are you on the go?
You don't ever have to fear again. With the Spaghetti Briefcase. This bad boy comes pre-packed. You're getting a camp stove, two pots, utensils, spaghetti with the sauce. Your one-stop shop for spaghetti on the go. Never get caught being a bad Italian ever again. This week's episode brought to you by the Spaghetti Briefcase.
Mamma mia.
Mamma mia. Let's get down to some fun facts, some trivia. I actually think I did all my quotes already. I was just feeling them while we were going through it. There were
some good ones.
There's some heaters in there.
Everybody hated this movie. It had a sub $30 million budget. It made like $2.5 million at the box office. So nobody saw it. Everybody hated it.
Except for me. Except for you.
I love it. I remember watching this movie when I was young and I was like, this is awesome. Like, I love this. I want to be, you know, this slick talking scout turned agent Al, because he just looks like he's having a good time.
This movie is simultaneously it's stupid, but it's smart. It is like extremely witty and also like absolutely ludicrous. It's like feel good and also just like the dumbest, most over the top baseball, like. It's just everything all in one. This movie was like far surpassed my expectations.
And again, like I can't stress enough just how like it handles, you know, like a mental health crisis or and therapy in general, because in the 90s, like therapy was not something you did.
Yeah. Underneath.
And if you did, you sure didn't talk about it.
Yeah. Underneath all of this is like, they treat it surprisingly well for.
Yeah. It's like a very healthy and normal approach to, you know, therapy.
like Dr. Aaron is the outside of Alan and Steven Brasco, like the most important character by a mile.
Oh yeah. Without question. Indeed. Especially because like the way she handles their relationship, like Al, you know, he won't be alone. Steve won't be alone. So Al's in there. And then it's clearly unhealthy for Al to be in there. So she just has sessions with Steve, which we as the audience never get to see, which I like.
I do like that. It's
I do private. Like that because, yes, because it's, listen, ain't none of our business either. It's kind of the point there. And then two sessions with Al without Steve, where she is now trying to deal with his issues regarding all of this. But I thought that was handled really well.
Like, this one's got layers.
Yeah.
This one's got layers. It's got incredible jokes. It has stupid slapstick stuff. It has a little bit for everybody, I think.
The director of this film, Michael Ritchie, had already done one of the most famous baseball movies of all time. He was the director of the original Bad News Bears.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was definitely worth mentioning. The original score in this is by Bill Conti of Rocky fame.
Wow.
Which is a great get. Michael Ritchie would go on. He directed Fletch, Cool Runnings. For any Pittsburghers out there, he directed the movie Innocent Blood, which if you've never seen is a Pittsburgh film about a vampire who hunts bad guys and only bad guys, mafiosos in particular. And they're in Bloomfield and they call it Bloomfield, which is nice.
You know what they had? They had
Robert Loggia. Robert Loggia is in that movie. Spoiler alert, becomes a vampire and it's amazing.
I got to get that one on the list.
I got that bad boy on DVD.
You're going to have to borrow that one.
Absolutely. A tie-in to our last one, if we want to do a chain here. Michael Ritchie was born in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Same as Stan the Man Ross.
We got one kinds of overlap.
I have one more incredible fact about Michael Ritchie. My man is 6'7".
Ooh.
Like, he should be making basketball movies.
That's
it. Himself with thunderous tomahawk dunks at 6'7".
That's... Man, you know, I tall for you know what I call that? I call that tall for what? Tall for what? To hold a camera, to write a script, to tell a guy.
What are you doing here? I get that you did the Bad News Bears, but like, come on, you could have been on the Bulls if you shouldn't be making the Scouts. You should have been there with Jordan and the Worm. Yeah.
94? He should be in the middle of a three-peat right now. Right. Are you kidding me? Right. This makes me mad. This upsets me. This is what we call tall for what? That's what we call it. That pisses me off, man. If I was 6'7", I would be leagued right now. No doubt. Pisses me off, man.
Wasted talent. Wasted talent. Even though the movie Innocent Blood rules.
A short guy could have made that movie.
Right. You could have just... Or make it in the off season.
Just let me get a couple inches, dude. It's unreal.
Using them.
All right. No noms for this one.
No, surprisingly.
No noms for this
like one. Whatsoever. It got literally no nominations for anything. Like not even like a weird Emmy.
No Razzies, no nothing.
I believe this
not
is
good enough Razzie. To be good, not bad enough to be bad. Let's go to rankings on this one.
Yeah, I think it's time for our final thoughts.
The baseball score's bad, Chris.
It's not good. It's not good.
I'm just going to be blunt here. This gets 150 out of 1,000 fishing teachers.
I am going to give this 1 out of a possible 100 boxes of phone numbers.
That is brutal.
It is bad. Like the baseball in this is bad. There's his pitching delivery is just not good at all. There's really not that much baseball because all he does is throw strikes and hit home runs.
It is like,
and then like there's some slapsticky baseball. Like I said, somebody slides into a like an elote cart that's on the field. Problematic.
somehow the ball coming out of his hand with the delivery that he has is less believable than Rowan Gardner in Rookie of the Year.
Because at least it makes like that rubber band noise in Rookie of the Year.
I mean, it's just, it's brutal. Movie score. I liked this movie.
I like it a lot. I understand the shortcomings as a movie. The pacing's a little off. It's kind of a collection of scenes. Everybody's pretty charming together, but the movie itself isn't fantastic.
I'm giving it 7.5 out of 10 chocolate baseball bets.
That's a solid baseball score. I'm going to give it a 6.75 out of 10. And I want that to be like an objective kind of thing. Like, I really like this movie. First of all, I've always been a fan of this. I've been watching it for 38 years or whatever, or when the hell did it come out? It's been out for 31. I'm going to give it 6.75 out of 10 Tony Bennett's.
Ooh.
Yeah, like it's not the best movie, but like it's worth a watch.
This movie is not better than movies that I've given lower scores, but I like it more than those movies.
Yes, this is a very fun movie to watch.
I was like hanging on every line from Albert Brooks. Like, he was delivering.
He steals every scene that he's in. Every scene. And there's some very funny people in this movie. And there's a lot of star power in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, Keith Hernandez is asking him to pay him in advance because he knows he's a deadbeat.
Pay me up front.
Yeah. They say, "Hey, you'll get it. You'll get it. Don't worry about it."
It's going to be tough to top this one for how good this one made me feel. Not going to lie to you. I really enjoyed this one.
I'm excited that you liked it because I like it and I was nervous. Because I also like Field of Dreams, and that adversely affected your life in a way that I did not anticipate.
I didn't expect.
You're going to have to go to Dr. H. Aaron to talk about Field of Dreams because you hate it that much.
I didn't hate it. It's just not what I wanted. You know, it's like Don't Meet Your Heroes. You know what I mean? Like, that movie was built up so much to me, and then it.
Oh my God.
It's just like, what is going on here?
This would be like if you got also body slammed by Steve Nebraska.
I hope to never have to meet Steve Nebraska and ask him a single question.
Because he doesn't like questions. There's a scene that we didn't actually talk about earlier. It's whenever they're getting off the plane in New York and they get separated and Brendan Fraser starts screaming Al over and over again. And it's really like there's genuine fear in that. And it's really upsetting.
Yeah, it is.
But again, back to our abandonment issues. Also, did you happen to take note of the team that he clobbers in Mexico when he's clanging dong after dong and just throwing heat?
No, he plays for the Commodores, right?
Plays for Commodores, but did you see who they were beating?
No.
The Pirates.
Oh, boy.
The Piratas. We just can't catch a goddamn break.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Tough look.
I think on that note, like, subscribe, ring the bell, do everything that you possibly can to get the word out. Climb to the top of Yankee Stadium. I'm telling you to do it. And scream the good word of Just a Bit Outside from the top of Yankee Stadium. Spin the sign, like I said, Skywriter, take out an ad in the local newspaper, carrier pigeon, smoke signal. I mean, you got to pull out all the stops on this one, folks.
I understand it's not that hard to domesticate crows. If you could somehow parlay that into having people, like maybe the crows could help here.
We got to get a murder of crows to spread the good word of Just a Bit Outside.
You could go to Mexico and you could tell people there whenever you're punished at work.
That is true.
And you could tell people there.
And
with your little auto translator.
With that being said, thanks for joining. Thanks for getting your popcorn ready. And look out on the socials for an announcement for our next movie coming up here in the near future. See you later.
Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my top is like my money because I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates or the steak by the plates.
Mr. Miller. going to end this recording.
Tremendous.